Everyone inside knows MCB is our professional weasels. This has weasel written all over it. We've been hitting all our usual contacts, but we're not getting many results, Gary said. There have been a lot of investigations lately and a lot of careers destroyed. Iran Contra, the stuff with Good Time Charlie. Got it. I thought about it for a few seconds. That phone work? Gary nodded. I take it this is a clean safe house? I'm going to have to make a lot of phone calls. Long distance. Should be clean enough, Bert said. Who are you going to call? Everybody. You don't charge straight at MCB, and you don't shout and whine and complain. What you do is start a reverse fire. What is MCB hiding that they're trying to shut me down? What do they know that you don't know? Who's really pulling the strings? MCB's been acting even squirrelier than normal lately. I'm surprised, given all their resources, that they haven't been able to find this ring that's kidnapping and selling virgins. Since I've been coming up with most of the leads, it's funny that they're suddenly smearing me. Why would they be doing that? I'll show them how popular they actually are. I'll start with Van Helsing. They have a great rapport with MI4. I'll get them asking those questions across the pond. I'll call everyone who MCB might have asked questions about me and see what questions they're asking. And I'll brainstorm with all of them to let them ask the questions and get it planted in their minds. Before long, MCB will be answering so many queries about what's going on that they'll have better things to do than fuck with Chadwick Gardenier or his friendly congressman. You're evil, Gary said, shaking his head. I like it. I grew up with the sort of people who do this like breathing, I said, shrugging. Alinsky, vilify, demonize, destroy. It's what they're trying with me. Then, Congressman, you get to start asking them hard questions. Like, why haven't they found that ring? Like, why monster attacks are on an uptick everywhere and they can't seem to get a root cause? Like, are they really worth the money we're spending on them since they don't really seem to be protecting the world at all? They seem to be mostly playing politics. Perhaps, Director, if you paid a little more attention to your job, we wouldn't be having these problems. MCB is a tough nut to crack. They've got a lot of clout in this town, Gary warned. They've ruined congressmen before. That's why we start the counterfire first. Asking them now would seem to be trying to clear your name. And if there's a point, Bert said. I mean, Chad, we trust you, but what if there's a basis to the investigation? Are there things to investigate about me? Sure. I work in New Orleans. The whole place is corrupt as hell. You don't get anything done there without paying people off.
I don't think so. I looked into that, Gary said, shaking his head. I did get it's not a corruption thing. It's a mystical thing. Supernatural. As in, you're playing the other side.
I said, frowning. I made a deal with a fae queen once. I thought about it for a few seconds again. I've got contacts that are puff applicable. My house was found through a Houdin priestess, but she's Whiteside. I'm not seeing anything, honestly. But when I ask the questions, I'll see what they're asking about. We need to go, Bert said. And Gary was not here. I played this game a bit. Got it. First thing in the morning, pre-dawn, I called the Van Helsing Institute. VHI was similar in some respects to MHI, and very different in others. It was a group of paid monster hunters like MHI. Differences branched out from there. For one thing, it also had a non-profit supernatural research side associated with the Royal Society for the Study of the Supernatural. It shared its extensive collection of supernatural research, including memoirs like this one, with Oxford and the BSS. It also tended more towards smart hunters versus the MHI approach of, if you don't have tattoos, you're probably not worth hiring. Fortunately, Dr. Rigby was available to take my call. Dr. Rigby was a character. Crazy eyebrows, crazy hair, crazy English academic one each.
Look like Einstein crossed with Gene Wilder. More on the Einstein brains. He dropped out of Reading to join the Royal Navy right after Dunkirk. After getting a destroyer blown out from under him in the North Atlantic, a major came to visit him in the hospital and asked a lot of questions. Tests of memory, tested his knowledge of French, then asked him if he'd like to do something more dangerous than guarding convoys, but also a bit more interesting. Which was how he ended up first in the Royal Marine Commandos, doing cross-channel raids into occupied France, then on to working with the resistance in France and Germany. It was during the latter period he'd started working on the supernatural side. After the war, he completed his degree at Reading and went straight into hunting. At one point in Seattle, while recovering from major surgery, I'd gone over to England to see how Van Helsing operated, and we'd clicked. Once a Marine, always a Marine or something. Also something about being able to communicate at a level above farts and grunts.
"Chad, boy, how are you doing?"
Rigby asked. "Surprisingly enough, not in recovery," I said. "We had a bit of an event at Mardi Gras, but it was one of those you either survived uninjured or you didn't survive at all. I was uninjured."
"I heard that the rest of your team was lost. My condolences.
They fought the good fight. New business and old business. Choose."
"Old business," Rigby replied. "We have found several possible references to your mysterious burrower. Alas, the only one that we've found that quite fits the description is limited in detail."
A while ago I had asked for Rigby's help to try and identify an unknown type of monster that had snatched several people from their homes in New Orleans. It tunneled through their floors and left behind few clues. We'd started calling it the Basement Boogie, which was a stupid name. But it worked. Limited is more than we have. Details such as they are?
"An ethnologist, Thomas Bowditch, studying witch doctors in the lands of the Ashanti, came upon a curious ritual. A powerful witch doctor would sacrifice slaves to what he described as a massive, amorphous, worm-like creature. The witch doctor professed that the emanations from the worm were the source of his great power, notably the power to raise the dead. The slaves would be chained near a great turmoil of earth. Then the witch doctor would chant prayers and cast herbs upon a symbol laid into the ground. The symbol appeared to be some sort of fungus rather than something inscribed. After the proper ritual was complete, the witch doctor would run away quickly. Then the worm would erupt. His description becomes somewhat erratic at that point. He has a clear drawing of the symbol, but the drawing of the worm is mostly eyes and teeth, were it not for his description of it as a loathsome, white, foul thing, unclean and evil, I would say Shoggoth. But white mitigates against it. The writings were first to be published in his seminal work, Mission from Cape Coast Castle to Ashanti, but British Supernatural Service became aware of his writings on witch doctors and forced a selective edit. We managed to find a copy of the edited portions at Oxford."
"Thank you, Doctor. That's an interesting possibility."
"I'd suggest checking for the symbol near the eruptions," Dr. Rigby said. "I'll fax you a copy of the symbol."
"Please. To my home, preferably. I'm currently out of town, but I'll pick it up when I get back. And, again, thank you."
"I'd be curious to know if this is, in fact, what you are dealing with. If the witch doctor's statements are correct, that would explain the constant necromantic outbreaks in your area."
"Agreed," I said. "But that text describes a single eruption. We've had dozens."
"That's assuming this was the only such site," Dr. Rigby pointed out. "This was deepest, darkest Africa at the time. Admittedly, the Ashanti were fairly developed for the period, but it's possible there were other sites which were unknown to the traveller. He left Ashanti soon thereafter, at least in part, I surmise, from horror. He's quite positive about most of the rest of the culture, but not that part. So concludes old business. New business? Perhaps a bit of a tiff with the American Monster Control Bureau?
You've heard from them?
From MI4, Rigby said, asking various questions under the Official Secrets Act.
About an ongoing investigation they cannot divulge.
I suspected that was the new business. To the extent I may know, I cannot divulge the nature of the investigation. Official secrets.
I'm less clear on that act than similar ones in the United States.
Can you divulge the nature of the question?
I'm trying to determine if this investigation has some validity or if it is a fishing expedition as part of a smear campaign.
I'll have to think about that, Rigby said.
But is there a reason for such a smear campaign?
I'm unsure. I have to wonder why this has come up now. If it is a deliberate smear campaign, to what end? I have been active in politics for nearly 3 years. They don't like that I'm it, but you'd think they'd gotten past that by now. Has something happened recently? Some shift in the political winds? The only real change was the loss of most of MCB New Orleans and the replacement office head.
Perhaps. But have there been any recent cases where your name would have come up?
Well, I had to think it over for a moment. There is one. We've had a systematic series of raids on homes, primarily in search of virgins, where they were sold for supernatural purposes.
The Seattle Lich, Rigby said. We heard about that.
I worked with the FBI a bit, which has the primary duty of investigating the non-supernatural aspect of the case. They're stymied. Very little evidence to go on. But what puzzles me, in terms of the MCB, is that this is a major case. There have been over 100 young women disappear who match the profile, and those are just the known cases.
In my experience, Chad, virgins are a valuable commodity among cultists, especially those who worship the great old ones. They are a vital component in many of their more powerful summoning rituals. Terrible business indeed. The MCB should be extremely concerned.
Yet MCB seems either disinterested in pursuing it or something. It seems odd.
Do you think MCB's...
Dr. Rigby paused.
You're not suggesting collusion, I hope.
I'm simply puzzled. Maybe? They seem to be more and more hostile towards hunting. They seem to believe that if all the hunters stopped hunting, monster problems would go away. That we are the provocateurs rather than defenders.
That has always been an undercurrent of MCB and MI4, lad,
Rigby chuckled.
If we weren't such a problem, the problem would go away. The undercurrent is that they feel they are superior at monster hunting, even though that has repeatedly proven untrue.
Monster events are on an uptick, so their hostility is on an uptick. I suppose the cause and effect could be there. They are more hostile because there is more work. I suppose that could be it.
Or the hostility could be linked to the monster uptick, Rigby said. That, again, would assume collusion in their ranks.
Which even I find hard to believe, I said. Franks works there.
Indeed,
Rigby shuddered. So I guess the question is, returning to the main point, can you divulge the nature of their questions about me?
Very well. They were mostly about your relationship with your family. Specifically your mother and brother.
Thornton? I didn't think about my hated elder brother much. I wasn't even sure where he was living and what he had done with himself. Mother, I can understand. She's a monster advocate. A group I could see the MCB being less than thrilled about. But I have no idea why they'd be asking questions about Thornton. Did they specify?
Really can't say, lad. However, your question about the virgins is interesting. That is really all I can say on the matter.
Curiouser and curiouser. I had never realized just how many contacts I'd built up over the years. Jesus, I had a lot of numbers.
Most of them said the same thing as Rigby. Not all of them were read in on unearthly forces. Those had been asked questions by mysterious men from the FBI. My dad said there were particularly pointed questions about Thornton and our relationship. I found out from him that Thornton had joined some cult out in California called the Church of the Sepulchre, which, come to think of it, didn't sound good at all. He also said that his answer about our relationship was a frank admission that Thornton had been a serial abuser, and as far as I was concerned, he could drop dead. I admitted that was pretty much the case. Oshiro had not been contacted. The FBI did not just ask Yakuza bosses questions, and our relationship had mostly been at arm's length. But they had questioned people in Sari who saw me, and most of the questions related to anything they knew about my brother. Had I ever been seen in his company? Did they have times I was positively present in Seattle? Given the number of receipts from Sari, the answer was if something was going on outside the Seattle area, I probably had an alibi. The doctors Nelson had gotten similar inquiries. I'm sure that went over well. They purely hated the MCB. Oshiro also said other contacts indicated that the investigators were asking about the virgin selling ring. I'd not only been on the Lich case, where a previously known string of disappearances and serial killings had finally been linked to the supernatural, but also the zombie outbreak where I had met Congressman Terry. A necromancer had been collecting potential sacrifices there, and according to his last words, they were to be traded to some group called the Dark Masters. Oshiro had picked up from Tong contacts that something had the FBI ringing alarm bells about me and my involvement. Where they got the information, unknown and unconfirmed. Special Agent Don Grant was the lead agent on the missing girls case. He was in, and even took my call.
So I'm now a suspect?
I suppose it wouldn't be the first time that someone who was helpful turned out to be involved. But that's also fairly rare.
Not as rare as you might think, Grant said. Anything else?
Am I a serious suspect? I asked. 'Cause right now it looks as if the MCB is using it as a smear campaign.
That's where it's coming from is all I can say. Probably shouldn't even say that. But MCB said that you were now a suspect.
I've got alibis out the wazoo. I don't think I was in the same state as most of those girls when they were kidnapped. And I was on call almost the whole time or working.
I really can't discuss it, Mr. Gardenier. We'd had a couple of dinners and drinks, batting this case back and forth. He'd called me Chad. Now it was Mr. Gardenier. Which means he suspected I was involved somehow.
Okay, Don. I'm not involved. Period. I'm busy as shit in New Orleans trying to keep a lid on this hellhole. MCB is crawling up my ass and running some secret squirrel investigation. The job of the MCB is lying and smearing people. That's their entire job. So you can either take my word that I'm not a culprit, or take the word of some supposedly sworn agent who spends his entire career wiping his ass with the Constitution. Just one question. What's it going to take for me to get this off my back?
I really can't say. Is there anything else?
Will solving it for you do it? I said. I've got shitloads of other things to do, but if that's what it takes, I'll just let the citizens of New Orleans die to hold your hand for you.
What part of I can't talk about this is unclear? Grant said.
You're a goddamn suspect, Chad.
How?
Not in the same state.
MCB was clear. They have pegged you as part of the ring. I don't know where they got their information from.
Well, then they are fucking wrong, okay?
I snarled.
Okay, fine. Get it. I'm a suspect. I am guilty until proven innocent. That's how the MCB works. Hell, that's how I work. Now I just have to find out why I'm a suspect so I can clear my name. which is impossible if nobody will tell me why I'm a suspect.
I get it. Can't talk about it.
Fine.
I'll call you when you can talk with me again. Bye.
Except at some point during that, he had hung up on me. Oh, this was bad. MCB had identified me as being part of a ring that kidnapped little girls to be used as human sacrifices. In most cases, killing their entire families using necromancy and necromantic entities like wights and revenants. There were two possibilities. Either MCB was doing this to deliberately smear me, or they actually thought I was involved. Either way, my name was Mud. If it was a hit job, MCB could go right on saying they had evidence, but it was part of an ongoing investigation. MCB seriously needed an inspector general. If they really thought I was involved, knew it for anywhere close to a fact, I'd already be in a basement somewhere, either being put down or undergoing hostile interrogation. That didn't mean they didn't consider me a suspect. They could be letting me roam free to see where I led. Or they could not have quite enough proof. Or they were going to garrote me the minute I walked out the door. Or they knew I wasn't involved and picked the worst possible case to smear me with. Why me? More interestingly, why Thornton? Why ask people about my relationship to Thornton? I'd tried to forget I'd ever had a brother. Thornton was an unmitigated bully growing up. Seriously, horribly abusive. One of those guys who could get away with it from being just so pathological that nobody could see the evil. It was easier to never think about him. But two entities had mentioned him. One was when I was dead in heaven. Pete had said, what was it? It was years ago, and while I was dead, your brother is headed in the direction of evil. Something like that. I wouldn't say headed so much as got it down, based on growing up with him. But Queen Shalana had mentioned him as well while I was taking the Harper's Challenge. Your brother is of another faction. The government grouped unearthly forces into different factions. God was, from the POV of people like my mother, simply one faction of outworld entities. I doubted Thornton had found Jesus. Faye wasn't a possibility because the Queen had said another faction. The two cases where the Dark Masters came up both involved necromancy. Necromancy was Old One's magic. Not everyone dabbling in that worked directly for the Old Ones, but they went hand in hand. So was Thornton involved in some necromantic cult? A call to Ray confirmed that the Church of the Sepulchre had turned up on MHI's radar before. Only the full name was the Church of the Unholy Sepulchre. A sepulchre was a holding place for the sacramental items during the Easter celebration, but it referred to the old French and Latin for a tomb. So, Church of the Unholy Tomb. Satan worshippers? On the other hand, an unholy tomb was simply a tomb that contained something unholy, or in which something unholy was trapped or buried. Those are not dead which sleeping lie. Assume the MCB are actually being heroes. I knew a lot of them, whatever their actions, were more duty-bound than I was. They felt like they were the only people holding the line against the end times, which would, yeah, be worse than New Orleans. The MCB loathed magic, but I'd heard they kept consultants on tap for serious cases. Making a bunch of powerful sacrifices to Old Ones certainly qualified. They'd probably done some sort of raiding or scrying. So why would they peg me, Chadwick Gardenier, as being involved in this ring? I wasn't. I knew that. So assuming this wasn't a smear campaign, how had they come up with me as a suspect? It had to be my blood relation to Thornton. I would worry about how to deal with that later. Right now, I needed a plane. I had until sunset Central Time to get back to work. It was full moon in New Orleans. I made one last call. "Remy," I said, "have you sent out the dinner invitations yet?"
"No, sir," Remy said. "I was intending to in tomorrow's mail."
"Hold off," I said. "Something's come up."
Chapter 4
"God damn it!"
Agent Robinson swore.
"Get these people out of here!"
It was just another case of New Orleans street theater. Shamblers had gotten out of Mount Olivet because a gate had been left open and trickled up Warrington Drive. As soon as Hoodoo Squad cleared the last of them, people started to flood out of their houses to see what was the matter. Normal primate curiosity. Which was apparently illegal, at least according to MCB. Agent Robinson was going nuts. He struck me as being the high-strung and emotional type anyway, and it didn't help there were some citizens out in their yards or walking up and down the road checking out the freshly re-killed zombies. "Good shooting, sir," I said, examining the headshots. One gentleman was Mr. Conrad Burroughs of 310 Warrington Drive. 50s, balding. He was carrying a Marlin lever-action rifle, probably 30-30 by the looks of it, and wearing a bathrobe. He'd popped a couple shamblers before we'd gotten here. The houses on Warrington were mostly solidly built ranch-style from the 1960s. All of them had barred windows. It was apparent there'd been no additional casualties in this neighborhood.
"Thank you, son. High compliment coming from Hoodoo Squad," Mr. Burroughs said.
"Will you turn off that stupid light?"
Agent Robinson stormed over to me.
"Who's that asshole?"
Mr. Burroughs whispered. "The government man," I warned.
"Damn it, Gardenier! What were you told about doing this in front of God and everybody?"
"You gotta go where the zombies are, Agent. When's coroner get here?"
"You will be doing this the right way from now on. None of this getting receipts from the coroner. Just collect tissue samples."
"One bag of ears coming up," I said, pulling out a mesh bag.
"You should just collect brain samples," Robinson ordered.
"Not my first rodeo. Either one works, as you can determine if they are all separate entities. And handing you a bag full of smelly zombie ears, which is perfectly legal and within puff requirements, is so much more fun. Care to give me the finger now?" Finger referred to the Federal Incident Number General. We had to have that along with the Federal Unearthly Creature Code Number and Confirmation of Kill Number to file for the Perpetual Unearthly Forces Funds bounty. You had to have the cock, the finger, and the fucking to get puffed. Look, I didn't make up these acronyms. I just had to use them on a daily basis.
"Just get the tissue samples," Robinson said, "and get your gear off. Incident is over. We don't want any questions."
"It's a full moon. I've already got another call," I said. "And you won't have any questions here. Maybe one or two new transplants in this neighborhood are unaware of the existence of Hoodoo. The longtime locals won't say a word. Nice thing about New Orleans, most of the residents can answer your questions before you ask them and read their own riot act. Ask Mr. Burroughs here if there are any new residents who have to get informed this isn't something you talk about. You're done."
"Do your job and let me do mine," Robinson growled. "If I had my way, you'd already be in one of those graves."
That sounded like he was personally offended. Robinson probably knew about the investigation. I took a shot in the dark. Your scrying was misinterpreted. That shot in the dark hit home.
"Who the hell have you been talking to?"
"Everyone," I said, "including FBI. And the casting was a misinterpretation, bub."
"It's pretty hard to misinterpret that you started the ring, bub," Robinson shouted. "If we had more than a reading on it, you'd be in the ground where you belong."
"Whoa, whoa,"
Mr. Burroughs said, holding up his unarmed hand.
What's this about?
Classified, Robinson snapped. I'm suspected of being seriously involved in a hoodoo ring, I said. Other than that, classified. Problem being, I know I'm innocent. These guys clearly want to hang me. And they're basing my involvement on a bad spellcasting.
We don't have bad spellcasters, Robinson ground out.
The FBI uses hoodoo?
Mr. Burroughs said. Your wizards are for shit, I said, closing the trunk of my car. There's 20 hoodoo men and women in this town would turn your wizard's hair white. Drawing a tarot card or casting the bones isn't the hard part. Now I knew what the investigation was based upon. The next thing would be finding out exactly what they'd done. Anyone can cast dem bones, Agent. The hard part is interpretation, which is very subject to influence. So if the person asking the question wants a certain answer, like that I'm involved, they'll get that answer if it is even vaguely possible. I could be involved because I've had contact with the people involved, as in brushed elbows with them at the mall. That's all the contact necessary, which is why castings are never allowed for kill orders. Smart people in your chain of command know that, even if you don't. Or as Abraham Lincoln once said, my distinguished colleague has his facts in order, but his conclusions are in error. Mr. Burroughs let out a bray of laughter at that, and had Robinson looking confused.
Sir, you need to go back into your house, Robinson snapped,
falling back on the MCV's default tactic of intimidation.
Make me, Robinson said. I got rights, son.
They'll take them away, I warned. Generally for good reason. Not in this case, but he'll spend taxpayer time ruining your life for petty revenge because he can.
No, Robinson ground out. No, I won't, because that is not how I do this.
But, Mr. Burroughs,
you're not contributing to this conversation,
Robinson said. At least he recognized the joke. Look, Agent, I'm not the bad guy. The interpretation of the casting was wrong. If I'm involved, it's because I took out a lich and one of their necromancers in Washington.
Alpha and Omega is pretty hard to misinterpret, asshole. Robinson said.
Beginner and ender.
You've probably already packed it up when you found out we were onto you.
Alpha and Omega? I was gonna have to look into that. Robinson, how many more girls are gonna have to get kidnapped, and how many more families are gonna have to die before you quit looking in the wrong direction?
That's terrible, Burroughs said.
We're in a terrible business, I said.
Gathered that. Mr. Burroughs said. This a sex thing?
Virgin sacrifices, I said.
Okay, that's about enough, Robinson snapped. Sir, go back in your house, or I'm going to arrest you as a material witness and hold you indefinitely, yes, just to be petty. And yes, I can do it and get away with it. Gardenier, go collect your tissue samples and keep your damn mouth shut. I don't know who has been spilling their guts, but I'm going to damn well find out.
Look in a mirror, asshole, I thought. The full moon had not been so bad, with the two-loop guru that had been turning unsuspecting people during the off-moon time gone. We'd only had about 10 calls a day. Usual mess of little demons, homunculi, undead, what have you. The problem being, MCB thought this was normal and had been their usual dicks, with special emphasis in my case. A few days later, I'd sat down with Earl and Ray the Third and read them in. Earl was looking wasted as he usually did after the full moon. A few steaks would fix that right up. MCB has been asking everyone and their brother about my involvement in the Virgin Sacrifice Ring. Part of that is they've got a casting that I'm involved. The Alpha and Omega. I don't know why or exactly what the casting was, but that puts me squarely in their sights as a suspect. So all my usual political contacts are running for cover.
Just like politicians, to be useless when you need them, Earl said.
Gary's doing his best, but because we're closely connected, he's in the crosshairs, too. The rest are, yeah, playing CYA. Problem being, MCB's going to be all over my ass until I prove my innocence, and probably even then, because you can't really disprove a negative. Part I don't get is my brother's name is involved as well. I haven't been able to get anything on Y there. Right now, it's a whisper campaign, and I'm losing. Any thoughts?
Pick a country without extradition.
Not helping, Earl. Do you know what sort of casting it is based upon, Chad? Ray asked.
No. I tossed out a couple of possibles, and nobody bit. I think if MCB was sure of my involvement, I'd be in the ground. I know Robinson wants to put me there.
We can try to reverse-engineer it, Ray said. Figure out what they were casting for. Probably use the Alpha and Omega prophecy and see where it leads. We'd need a good caster.
Magic always comes back to bite you in the ass, Earl replied.
Sometimes you've got to fight fire with fire, Earl, Ray said, not sharing his superior's biases. We'd need a good caster, somebody with legit skills. We're in New Orleans. Throw a rock. I know some good white casters, I said.
White as in faction, not race.
You find someone strong enough, they'll be able to figure out how the MCB came to their conclusions, and we can get ahead of them. Ray seemed to love the idea.
I'm telling you, kids, magic is a crutch. Hunters should only use it when there's no other choice. Trinkets and simple enchantments are bad enough, and even those let you down when you start to count on them. You've got it in your head that magic is an easy way out, but it's always got a cost, Earl said.
Magic is just a terrible description for fundamental forces we simply don't understand well, Ray insisted. It should just be another tool in our toolbox. We use dangerous tools all the time. Bombs, guns, no problem. The key is understanding how to use them safely. Magic is no different.
Bullshit. Guns and bombs don't corrupt your soul and drive you insane.
Earl, you're hung up on this superstitious, old-fashioned prejudice, Ray said.
Which I earned the hard way. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
It felt like they'd had this argument a few times already. Okay, table that idea for now. Second point, I said. Oxford and Rigby turned up a possible for our basement boogie.
Which is? Ray asked.
I brought out the papers Dr. Rigby had faxed to my house and laid them out. There was an ethnologist in what is now Ghana who stumbled upon a powerful Houdun priest. The priest, whose primary power was over the undead, would sacrifice slaves to a large, worm-like entity. Ray was quickly scanning over the materials as Earl sort of leafed through them.
Sounds like a minion creation of the old ones.
Shoggoth, maybe? Earl asked.
White, gray, green, I said. So, no. And appeared to continue underground, worm-like.
This is a new one to me, Ray said, frowning. And I've never seen the symbol.
The symbol felt pretty blasphemous in itself. One of those things that even in a fax oozed evil. I wasn't looking forward to seeing the worm. They didn't write that either. Supposedly fungus grew in that shape. What isn't clear is how to get it to come out, I said. There are no details on that.
Holy water, Earl said.
Why holy water? Ray asked.
Just a hunch, based on that symbol, Earl said. Assholes like to summon things like this. Please come forth, O great worm. Then it comes out and eats the sacrifice and gives power. Pour some holy water on this, and it'll come out ready to kill whatever just burned the hell out of its sign.
I thought you'd never seen this, I said.
Never seen this in particular. Worms and such coming out of the ground. But I've seen things like it. And if that don't work, try something else. The important thing is you offend it somehow.
Gotta find the symbol first, Ray said. Got a dozen places to look.
I replied. 4030 Eagle Street was the first place I'd run into the basement buggy. The house was a single-story ranch in Holly Grove, near the New Orleans Country Club. Decent neighborhood, but had the standard New Orleans locked-down tight-with-bars thing going. Barred windows and doors in New Orleans were for more than keeping out burglars. The friendly next-door neighbor I'd met on my first visit, with the late and very much missed Shelby, didn't appear to be home, which was a pity. His wife made great sweet tea. Ray and I entered cautiously. Except for a buildup of mold in the corners, not much had changed. The place was still more or less identical. Given that the door was busted open, I'd expected New Orleans' various neighborhood association members to have thoroughly looted it. But nothing had been touched. Even the burglars in New Orleans didn't touch hoodoo houses. "There's the hole," I said, pointing to the remnants of the exit point. The concrete slab had been busted wide open in a shower of concrete about a meter and a half wide. Dirt was piled up around it.
"Looks like the place has been ransacked," Ray said.
I was thinking it hadn't changed. This is what it looked like when Shelby and I checked it out nearly a year ago.
And it's still closed?
Nobody would live here after that, except maybe an idiot Yankee transplant.
"Well, let's see if we can find that symbol," Ray said, casting around.
"If it's under the slab, we'll have our work cut out for us. But if it's under the carpet..."
It was under the carpet. The hole was in the middle of the living room. In one corner, we found the symbol under the carpet, right next to a doll.
"Couple who lived here were older," I said, looking at the doll. "Their grandkids were visiting. 6 people, 4 of them children. Vanished without a trace.
Eaten by this amorphous worm," Ray said, looking at the symbol.
Sure enough, it was a slimy collection of spores. It was hard to tell if it had been drawn in something and then bloomed, or if it had just spontaneously grown that way. He glanced suspiciously at the hole.
"I guess let's try the holy water thing and see what happens.
Let me get the sprayer. That way we can shoot it from the door and run like hell." We had filled a plastic weed sprayer with holy water on the way here. Most of the local churches knew Hoodoo Squad. I stood in the doorway and pumped the sprayer until it was pressurized.
"Ready when you are."
Ray had taken up a position by one of the barred windows looking into the living room and drew his pistol. We weren't really sure what, if anything, was going to come out of the hole, but he was ready to put a bullet in it. I squirted the holy water into the corner. I emptied the whole container. We had to wait a few minutes while the water ran down the cracks. The floor began to rumble.
"Oh, it's a-coming," I said, bounding away from the open door and over to where Ray was standing.
Bad move. It was massive. All eyes and gray-green leprous skin and grinding teeth. Amorphous worm is the only reasonable description for that loathsome monstrosity that suddenly filled the living room with its foul bulk. Semi-transparent, you could see alien and vile organs bulging and writhing beneath its pustulant membrane. Maggots crawling in eye sockets were reasonable and decent compared to that gelatinous, unholy thing that erupted from the ground.
"Ugly," Ray said, trying for an Academy Award for Master of Understatement.
The blasphemous monster, denied any prey, seemed to sense us by the window. Or perhaps one of the thousands of mad, red, winking eyes spotted us there. A big pseudopod squirted towards us.
"Run!"
The glass shattered out in a blast as we got out of the house fast. Ray hadn't even bothered to pull the trigger. It wouldn't have done any good. As we reached the dead front lawn, its bulk pressed between the bars. They began to give way under its mass. The bars finally succumbed and burst forth,
along with its bloated flesh. But as the wretched thing touched sunlight, it quailed, roiling back and steaming under the direct light of God's sun. It could not withstand the light. It shrunk back then with a disgusting, liquescent sound and disappeared back into the tainted ground. The street was quiet.
"Keep moving," Ray said. "It might not like sun, but I don't want it coming up under us."
"I'm for that," I said, trying to stay calm. I'd seen some shit, but that was fucking vile.
"Okay," Earl said, after we'd finished our verbal report. "Sure sounds like some minion of the old ones."
I called Dr. Rigby and thanked him for the tip. I was also able to give him some more details of the investigation and why I was a suspect. He was guarded in his reply, but agreed to look into it. I said we'd contact him again when we had more information on this amorphous worm.
"But how do we kill it?" Ray asked.
"Them," I said. "We've had 14 incidents of eruptions. So, how do we kill them?"
"Assuming there's a different one at each hole, and not one big gummy worm blob thing tunneling around town," Ray mused.
He was handling this better than I was.
"Either way, my answer is kill it with fire." "Might work," Earl said, nodding. "But it would take a hell of a lot of fire. MCB will shit bricks if we burn down a neighborhood."
"Timer," Ray suggested. "We put something in there with a fuse on it, leave the offering, then get the hell out of the way."
"Pig," I said. "Put a gutted pig in the house. You can put a lot of thermite into the cavity of a pig, and I intend to pack the shit out of that sucker. Hook up a 10 or 20 second delay on it, hook the fuse igniter to a wire. Thing comes up all angry again, sees the offering, swallows it. Goes back down, fuse pulls."
"One problem," Ray said. "Assuming we kill it, we're gonna need to file on it. The only previous reference to this thing is a single story from Ghana in the 1700s. It might not even be the same thing. If this is a totally new entity, Treasury will have to make a ruling."
"Shit," Earl said. "We're gonna have to call the Puff Adjuster."
The Puff Adjuster's name was Harold P. Coslow, Jr. He had appeared out of nowhere when we were setting our worm trap. We'd chosen a different house in case the first worm had gotten wise. It was another ranch house, 1506 Andrew Street, in the lower Ninth Ward. The street was definitely ghetto, but had the usual New Orleans crowd hanging around. Franklin had notified MCB, and they had insisted on a perimeter that held back the crowds this time. The adjuster was shorter than me, so maybe 5'3", hunched back, bald head, covered by an old-fashioned fedora, shabby black wool overcoat, carefully cared for, but ancient and used, which had to be stifling since it was about 100 freaking degrees. If it bothered him, it wasn't evident. Black eyes with a hound dog's expression. Worn, equally well cared for brown leather shoes I suspected had been rebuilt over and over again. You just knew he had a change purse in his shabby but well cared for pocket. He was carrying a brown briefcase that was as worn as the rest of his ensemble.
"Mr. Coslow," Earl said, nodding his head deferentially. Earl wasn't deferential to anybody. I mean, anybody. Who the hell was this guy?
Mr. Coslow looked at him for a moment and pulled a leather-bound journal from his overcoat pocket. He read it for a moment.
"Is it still Harbinger?" he asked.
"Yes, sir."
"It is difficult to keep up, you know," Mr. Coslow said, putting the book away. "Shackelford, Wolf, Harbinger. I do wish you would pick a name and stick to it. It complicates my paperwork."
"I apologize. I have to live out here. People ask questions."
"You suspect a Kifo Menu," Mr. Coslow said.
"Excuse me, sir?" I said carefully.
If Earl was treating this guy with kid gloves, I was going to practically grovel. You know what this is?
No. If it is a Kifo menu, I will have to observe it with my own eyes. The secretions are similar enough to other entities. They are hard to sort out. I rather doubt Kifo menu, however. There has never been a recorded Mava Panavae in North America. They have only been found in West Africa, interior Indonesia, and northwest Mongolia. Then there is the problem of finding the Mava Panavae. While individual pseudopods are puff-applicable, without removal of the Mava Panavae, destroying them is quite pointless.
It attacked us with a worm, I said.
The worm, as you call it, is the pseudopod, young man,
Coslow snapped.
A Kifo menu is a feasting entity of a Mava Panavae. It is estimated they can have up to 60 such protuberances, and the body could be 120 meters in length. Previously recorded supernatural generation fields for an Old One servant entity of that size were approximately 17 kilometers in radius as a red zone, with a yellow zone out to 56 kilometers, which would, admittedly, explain the high level of undead activity in this region. I still strongly doubt a Kifo menu. Rare does not begin to describe them. Similar fungoid symbols can also be found with Mara Ugaulaka, Dawoa Gildru, Lefu Laraba, and Kurth Vedekye, all of which have been found in North America. But we shall see.
I wanted to ask questions. Follow up. Was he saying there was some sort of massive entity under New Orleans and the giant Shoggoth worms were just sprouts off of it? But I could tell that asking more questions was a way to really piss this guy off. I could only think of one thing useful to say.
Fuck,
Earl said, taking the words right out of my mouth.
This is like a Yemek diary. Shit.
Yes, related, or at least originating in the same reality. Assuming Mava Panavae, this could be significantly larger and more powerful,
Coslow said, nodding at Earl as if he were a student who had managed to just miss putting on a dunce cap.
My time is valuable, Mr. Harbinger.
We're about ready, Earl said.
Ray and Decay were setting the trap. We'd gotten a pig from a slaughterhouse, complete except for being gutted, then packed it with thermite and an igniter.
Done, Ray said, coming out of the house.
You do realize this is enough thermite to melt the turret of the USS Iowa?
This had better not cause a big incident, Special Agent Campbell said, striding over. We've got enough questions about what's...
When he saw the puff adjuster, he stopped.
Oh, sorry, sir. I didn't realize you were here.
Everybody was scared of Mr. Coslow.
I was starting to like him.
My time is, as I previously noted, valuable,
Coslow said as he gave the agent a stern nod.
I don't have the patience for another first reason argument right now. May we begin? I should note that there may be a good bit of quite unwholesome smoke. Mortals should don breathing filters.
Mortals? Earl just crossed his arms and sighed.
Put on y'all's gas masks, he said.
We donned respirators as Ray started the pump. We were well back from the house this time. There was the awful shaking of the ground, then the eruption. As the house rattled, Coslow casually strolled up to the window and looked through. I could tell from the set of his shoulders it was professional curiosity. And he hadn't donned a gas mask. Neither had Earl. The thing didn't try to get out of the house. Apparently the pig was sufficient offering. There, with another blasphemous liquid sound, it was gone. I started to reach for my gas mask, and Earl put his hand on my arm and shook his head. Then there was another rumble, harder this time.
It was like being in about a magnitude 5 earthquake, based on my time in Seattle. Then gray-green smoke started pouring out the front door of the house. Even with the gas mask, it felt unclean. I wished I'd put on mop gear or a silver suit. I backed up as it poured out of the house in a wave of fumes and horror. Eventually, the smoke stopped gushing forth, and Mr. Coslow walked over to the group. If the smoke had bothered the puff adjuster, it was not apparent. He brushed some dust from the arm of his old overcoat.
"I stand corrected. Kifo Menu, Large. FUCCN 11189-3. A well-developed Mava Panava A is now positively identified in North America. Mava Panava A is FUCCN 11189-1. That is my official ruling. I will send the paperwork to the MCB. You gentlemen have quite a problem on your hands."
He walked away without another word. Then the argument started.
"Shit!"
Earl said, rubbing his fingers through his hair. I'd never seen him so upset.
"Do we know anything about a
Mava Panava?" Ray and I both chimed in. Campbell, with no puff adjuster to fear, had taken out his anger on us. We were bad boys for causing an incident, even though we'd done as instructed and given them plenty of advance warning. I suppose he'd prefer we just let the damn thing live and eat more people. He wasn't interested in the fact that there appeared to be a massive entity hiding under New Orleans, seemed to think that that was none of our concern. We were ordered to leave the area while he handled the incident we'd caused. I was starting to get really tired of his crap. And even though we'd figured out how to kill the Kifo Menu, which was apparently just one of what was probably 60-something giant blob snakes growing out of the giant Mava Panava A, which had probably been under this spot since before the dinosaurs. "I'm saying it sounds Hindi," I said.
"Swahili," Ray suggested.
"Could be Menangkabau. He mentioned they're found in interior Indonesia."
"What the hell is—"
Earl said, then stopped and snarled.
"I hate this kind of shit. Shit you don't know about and don't understand is the worst kind of shit in this business. Puff adjusters never tell you shit either. They just pronounce and go. They're so top-secret tight-lipped you never know if they've got actual intel or they're just pulling guesses out of their ass."
"Earl," Ray chimed, "let me and Chad research it. We'll find something. We've got the names now, at least. That's a start. I don't give a shit what this new MCB fella says. There's a puff on this thing, which means we kill as many as we can find, starting with all the incidents."
"We still don't know how much the puff is," Milo said.
"Susan's looking into it now that we have the fucking," Ray said. "Doesn't really matter. These things need to be dealt with."
"If we start killing them, will more erupt?" Milo asked, frowning. "These are part of one big thing, right? They're like its tongue. Tongues? Tentacle tongues? Whatever. We burn one, will it start making others? That weird Coslow guy said there could be a bunch more. That could be bad."
"How often do they erupt?"
Earl asked.
"Random," I said, "but seems to be increasing."
"If they're increasing, we need to just kill them and hope for the best," Ray said. "And find out what we can about the Mava Panava A and how to kill it."
"Fire," Milo said. "Lots of fire."
"Action beats reaction, but if reaction is all we got, we take it," Earl said. "Until we know how to kill the body, we'll bait every previous attack spot, and when there's a new eruption, we'll hit that one too. Once we know how to kill the body, we'll take it out."
"We've got to find it first," I said. 100 meters sounds big, but we don't know how deep it is or where it is located exactly, so we can't just drill down to it. Until we can find the central body, we're going to be killing these things forever."
"Then we keep killing them forever,"
Earl said.
Shake the trees. Ray?
I'll head back to Cazador and see what's in the archives, Ray said.
Iron Hand, they like you at Oxford.